For the record, Brad Benning, registration number 31946, appearing on behalf of county plaintiffs. That's the Board of County Commissioners in their official capacity, also the county commissioners individually as taxpayers and residents of Gilpin County. Give you a brief, I'm sure you've read the briefs, obviously, but this is a very important constitutional case. This involves a dispute over the distribution of funds from the limited gaming fund. A dispute exists as to the meaning of gaming revenue. The state treasurer has the constitutional requirement to distribute those funds according to or in proportion to gaming revenues generated in the respective gaming county and cities. The county's position is the language of the statute is pretty clear. The gaming revenues is any revenue deposited in the limited gaming fund. The state defendants and appellees' decision is the gaming revenue is synonymous with AGP, adjusted gross proceeds, a term that's already defined in the Constitution and Limited Gaming Act. County plaintiffs filed a complaint, including two claims, Your Honors. The first was a claim under the APA against the Gaming Commission for in challenging its recent promulgation of a rule on that issue. The county defendants, plaintiffs brought a second claim, a claim for declaratory relief that was broader than its APA claim, named all the interested parties, namely the state treasurer, who is again given the sole discretion and requirement to distribute those funds from the limited gaming fund. Unfortunately, these important constitutional issues were not reached. Denver District Court dismissed the case before the merits could be reached on jurisdictional grounds, ruling that the Denver District Court did not just have jurisdiction, but this court did have initial jurisdiction over the APA claim. And in essence, that
at that point, did you understand that you had the right to appeal and then chose not to appeal? Or how did that, what happened at that point when the district courts dismissed for lack of jurisdiction?
Well, the district court dismissed, Your Honor, we understood that it was a final order, that it dismissed with prejudice. So that's why we sought appellate relief from this court.
Okay, please keep.
Sorry to interrupt. You don't like Rule 24.
I'm sorry?
You don't like Rule 24, right?
The new rule. And that's what we say.
That's kind of the essence of this case, isn't it?
That's the merits, exactly. Well, I should say that's not the essence.
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out here.
That was one of the actions under the APA we challenged. That's what the Gaming Commission promulgated, which, again, defines gaming revenue synonymous with AGP.
And you think Rule 24 is unconstitutional?
That is under our APA claim, yes, we do.
Okay.
As far as the court errors, first and foremost, we have the Limited Gaming Act, and under that act, under the licensing section, you have 521, judicial review of proceedings of the Gaming Commission. That rule says that jurisdiction may be sought in the Court of Appeals pursuant to the APA. Therefore, it defers to the APA. You look to the APA, and that requires generally that review is in Denver District Court, except for limited exceptions in subsection 11. 11B requires an order to trigger jurisdiction of the Court of Appeals. Order is a specifically defined term in the Act, in the APA, and it expressly excludes rulemakings. No order was entered ever into this case. This is a rulemaking. Hence, Denver District Court jurisdiction was proper. That interpretation is consistent with the plain meaning and definitions used in the Act, harmonizes all the provisions, 521 and the APA, and is consistent with predominant methods of statutory interpretation.
Now, could I ask you, 521 directs to the Court of Appeals. That's pretty clear, right?
You say, it directs to the Court of Appeals pursuant to the APA. You look at the APA, then APA has a Court of Appeals procedure.
That says under 11, whenever judicial review of any agency action is directed to the Court of Appeals, the provision of this subsection 11 shall be applicable. Don't those read together?
We're reading 11, Your Honor, yes. And if you look under that.
521 directs the Court of Appeals, and 11 directs to 11 when it, other statutes direct to the Court of Appeals.
I'm sorry, 11 directs to.
A lot of numbers here.
Sure. So
521 directs to the Court of Appeals, right?
Right.
And 11.
What's it? Yes.
11 says when judicial review of any agency action is directed to the Court of Appeals, 11 applies.
When I read any agency action in that preface, it is not the controlling word, Your Honor.
Okay.
The 11.
That's what I wanted you to answer.
11B under that, under 11, requires an order. The language of that requires an order to trigger the Court of Appeals jurisdiction. There was no order. And again, order is defined in 244102 as any decision of an agency excluding rulemaking. So it does not apply to rulemaking. You know, Your Honors, I see my time is up. I want to just address a few things before I defer to Mr. Wilson. Again, Purcell was not controlling here. Purcell should not have been relied on by the district court. It involved a adjudicatory proceeding, not a rulemaking.
But didn't the Eagle Peak Farms case say that the word action encompasses both rulemaking and adjudication?
That was apples and oranges, Your Honor.
Why?
Eagle Peaks was a decision. What controls, the APA or the Organic Act in that case? The Organic Act at issue in that case, the Groundwater Management Act, had an entirely self-contained procedure. Different kind of judge, different venue, different standard review, different procedure, all contained in the Groundwater Management Act. Here, you don't have that. You have simply a statute that refers, says it's reviews pursuant to the APA. Then you have to look to the APA. Again, not the issue that was dealt with in Eagle Peak Farms. What's important about Eagle Peak Farms, though, is that it says where you have pursuant to the APA, it's the APA. You look there. You look at what, I don't think you can throw out the baby with the bathwater there and just adopt one section of the APA and not read the rest. I think that's, again, that's what the district court did, finding a conflict. But you're supposed to harmonize those provisions, and we offer the only interpretation that does that. Give the rest of the floor to Mr. Wilson.
Good afternoon. Patrick Wilson on behalf of the City of Blackhawk, registration 26303. Judge Lemon, in her order dismissing Blackhawk's cross-claims, made two fundamental errors. First, she failed to recognize that Blackhawk had properly and timely submitted declaratory and injunctive relief claims against the state treasurer. As Mr. Benning mentioned, the state treasurer has an independent, constitutionally mandated duty to make distributions from the gaming fund pursuant to the constitutional language. What the treasurer did instead was to defer to the Gaming Commission's rule. The Gaming Commission has no authority to tell the treasurer how to make these distributions. In fact, the Gaming Commission's authority under the Constitution is limited to issuing rules and regulations related to the licensing of gaming. It has no authority to issue regulations telling the state treasurer how to execute his constitutional functions under Article 18, Section 9. The other error that she made, in addition to not recognizing that there was an independent cross-claim outside of the APA, was that she failed to determine whether or not the remedies afforded in the APA were adequate. Here, they're not adequate. The amended Rule 24, the most recent Gaming Commission action, which is subject of the APA claim, simply codified and clarified pre-existing practices. So if we were to go to under the APA and have amended Rule 24 set aside and restrained and put off the books, the Gaming Commission and the Treasurer can simply go back to their original Rule 24 that they've been operating under for previously and continue to make the same unconstitutional distributions from the gaming fund.
Well, if they change the rule, wouldn't you be able to challenge that? I mean, wouldn't that be a significant change?
Well, they didn't really change the rule, they just added to it. But simply, they didn't change their behavior because it didn't result in a change in policy. They just simply said, we've been doing this illegal, but they didn't say this, but they've been doing, they've been distributing the funds improperly for a while, and then they just tried to codify it, and now say, well, after 30 days or 45 days, it's immune from judicial review. That can't be the law here. Quasi-legislative actions taken by unelected administrative agencies are not forever immune from judicial review.
So I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just had a question right about where you're at. Okay. Was Black Hawk a party to the rulemaking proceeding?
Well, I'm not sure if we were a party.
Somebody was sitting there, right?
I was there.
Okay.
We knew what was going on for sure. I'm not sure if we were a party to it.
Because I thought in paragraph 14 of your answer, you admitted that you were a part of the rulemaking proceeding.
And I think I saw that.
Closing up.
I don't think it's that. I don't think that we were a party in the terms of a party as defined in the APA. We were there at that thing.
But it did end up as you admitted you were a party.
Yeah, we
could say you were a party.
Well, that might have been a mistake. I don't think it's accurate that we were a party to the rulemaking proceedings. We were there. We were aware of it. We had an opportunity, but we chose to simply bring a declaratory relief action to correct the constitutional deficiencies. I'll reserve the last 4 or so minutes for our rebuttal. Thanks.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. Carrie Williams, a senior assistant attorney general. I'll be making argument, registration number 16805, and I will be arguing on behalf of the state defendants. The most simple and straightforward interpretation of the Limited Gaming Organic Act Section 521 is the correct interpretation as found by the district court. Final review of agency action is to the Court of Appeals, and that's in the Organic Act, and it states final action twice. The APA has been interpreted by courts consistently to say that where the General Assembly has provided a statutory right of review for administrative proceedings, such review must be taken in strict accordance with those provisions, or else the court is without jurisdiction to act. They also specifically say that where the General Assembly provides that an administrative appeal is filed in the Court of Appeals, the District Court does not have jurisdiction. Failure of the appellants to file in the Court of Appeals was a jurisdictional defect. Now, in the APA, it does provide that any action that is directed to the Court of Appeals shall you shall follow the procedure in 244.106.11, and that provides for appeal to the Court of Appeals within 45 days. The Purcell case, which is a Court of Appeals case, the site is 919 Pacific 2nd, 905, 907, 1996, addressed the very argument made that's being made by the appellants here today, and that is that this is a licensing, it is not a licensing action, therefore that's the only thing that can be appealed to the Court of Appeals and not any other type of case. And the court specifically addressed that issue and found that any construction limiting actions under 521 to which the statute applies is simply inconsistent with this unambiguous legislative intent. The plain language of 521 directs all final action to the commission of the commission to the Court of Appeals. The court below, cited by the district court in this case, specifically noted the absence of any limiting or qualifying language in 521. And case law is clear that the Organic Act trumps any general provisions of the APA. The APA itself even has a provision that states that such specific statutory provisions shall control as to such agency where there's any conflict between this article and a specific statutory provision. So final action of the commission is to the Court of Appeals, and action is defined to include rulemaking in the APA. The APA addresses the issue of when a rule shall become final. It specifically states in 244.103.5 that Once a rule becomes effective, the rulemaking process shall be deemed to have become a final action for judicial review purposes. You do not have to come to a very strained or interpretation to reach the plain, simple language, which is that there was no jurisdiction in the district court for these actions.
Ms. Williams, let me ask you, 244-106-11B provides that proceedings under 106-11 shall be commenced by the filing of a notice with the Court of Appeals within 45 days after the date of service of the final order entered in the action by the agency. In this instance, once the rulemaking order becomes final, as you just said, is it thereafter immune from any constitutional challenge by everyone if there's no notice of appeal filed with us within 45 days of that time?
Well, on the facts of this case, the appellants were parties to the proceeding. They were parties, and just because somebody comes and doesn't exercise their right to provide testimony, the fact that Blackhawk failed to provide testimony or chose not to provide testimony, they still participated by coming, getting notice.
So you would agree, of course, Blackhawk was a party.
Absolutely. In fact, the Gaming Commission converted this matter from a declaratory order action filed just by Gilpin County, and Gilpin County would have been the only party bound by that. But this is a zero-sum game. Anything, any money that increase that goes to Gilpin County comes out of Cripple Creek, Taylor County, and City of Central. So the commission had an open rulemaking proceeding for all interested parties and anybody to come, the licensees, the gaming, the casinos, anybody who could come and provide information and testimony. It was widely noticed, and it was held, the main part of the hearing was held in Central City Blackhawk office for the convenience of Gilpin County, Central City.
Ms. Williams, let me follow up on this. Because I too have what I think are concerns that my colleague has, and that's about the adequacy. There are five parties here, basically, right? Two counties and three cities. Is it your position then that they all had an opportunity to bring a challenge to the merits of this case within 45 days after the rulemaking occurred, and that having not done so, that they are forever barred from challenging Rule 24?
That's correct. All their claims concerning the constitutionality and all these issues could are covered under the APA. The APA expressly allows the court, whichever court, to look at, to see if the agency action is contrary to constitutional right, power, privilege, or immunity, if it's in excess of jurisdiction or authority, and it gives the purpose or limitations, and the court shall hold unlawful and set aside the agency action, and shall restrain enforcement of the order or rule under review. So anybody could have come and filed that appeal. That is correct. And I understand there's a case, the Colibri Wildlife Commission case, that talks about somebody who didn't even have anything to do with the rulemaking. The rule didn't even apply to them until 5 years hence. There's simply none of those equitable arguments in this case. Blackhawk and Gilpin County were parties to this proceeding. They had notice of every step of the way. And I will just comment, it's disingenuous to argue that if a court were to say, whether it's this court or any court, were to invalidate that particular provision of Rule 24, to say this is unconstitutional. That rule superseded any kind of historical anything. The commission would not violate the court's order and not restrain enforcement under that interpretation. So that is simply a red herring that counsel has raised in this matter. I see that.
Or are you saying that from this point forward, some person or other entity, such as another city, if there was one that had standing, could challenge the constitutionality of Rule 24 because they weren't a party to the rulemaking procedures or rulemaking process that occurred?
Well, the only parties to the rule in question affects were present and were parties. So it's not.
So there's no one else out there that might have standing.
Exactly. However, the commission in a rulemaking proceeding still will take any interested party. I mean, arguably, there might be somebody who receives money from the county you know, that would have wanted to come and testify, and that's why it's widely distributed. But the point is, this distribution directly affects the parties who were present, and they had adequate opportunity to file an appeal, and they just did it in the wrong court. And it's simply not true that there was not, that they did not participate, because even if you come and you choose not to testify, you have participated by choosing not to testify. So, and I'm going to reserve the rest of the time for counsel for Cripple Creek. Thank you very much.
Your Honor, may it please the court, again, Charles Norton on behalf of the City of Cripple Creek. I will not repeat issues that were ably handled by counsel for the Attorney General's office. I would note a couple of things with regard to the court's questions about the adequacy of the remedy in this instance. Cripple Creek participated in the rulemaking process as a party. Cripple Creek was provided notice and the opportunity to give testimony on that occasion.
Blackhawk provided notice?
They were, Your Honor.
Okay.
I think that's essentially been admitted in the pleadings. We presented extensive material related to the fiscal impact of the proposed rule on Cripple Creek. The Division of Gaming presented extensive material that related to the legislative history of the adoption of Section 9 of Article 18. In other words, Your Honor, the issues that would be under consideration in a declaratory judgment action for judicial review. So there was a full opportunity to present material addressing these issues. For example, the Division of Gaming noted that the term gaming tax revenues has been adopted by Amendment 50 subsequent to the initial adoption of Section 9 of Article 18 as a term which is specifically addressed in the context of extended limited gaming activities, so after hours activities and so forth. The term gaming tax revenue is used in that context. With regard to the allocation of the initial set of games that were contemplated when the amendment was initially passed, the term gaming revenues, not gaming tax revenues, but gaming revenues is again consistently used. When the people adopted Amendment 50, subsequent to the initial passage of the Limited Gaming Amendment, when they adopted Gaming 50 or Amendment 50, they did nothing to disturb the term gaming revenues as used in the initial distribution scheme. They did not impose the term gaming tax revenues on those original allocations. Now, all of this was aired fully before the Gaming Commission as an inquiry into legislative intent. What did the people intend when they ratified this amendment? There was every opportunity to address those historical materials afforded to both Gilpin County and Blackhawk. Blackhawk did not choose to give a presentation at that time. Gilpin County did, responded to a number of the issues of construction of Article 18, Section 9.
There is let me focus you a little bit on the procedural issue that I've been grappling with a little bit.
Certainly.
So the rulemaking decision comes down. No order is issued. The five parties who were involved are the only five parties who could be involved currently under gaming, as I understand it. What precedence was out there to let Gilpin County and Blackhawk know that they had 45 days to appeal the rulemaking decision when there was no order that was sent to them?
Your Honor, this court and the Supreme Court have in the past taken original jurisdiction in at least one instance in a situation that involved rulemaking. The case is cited in briefs. It's the Brown opinion, which was cited, I think, in all of the principal briefs. And in that case, what was at issue was the definition of the boundaries of the gaming district within the cities of Blackhawk and Central. And the commission, the Gaming Commission discard those boundaries according to certain constitutional criteria, and the court accepted direct review of that. Now, I have to add the issue of jurisdiction was not raised in that case, so it was not specifically addressed. But certainly it would have put counsel on notice that at least one court had taken the approach that this direct review under Section 521 existed, and they should have followed up accordingly. Again, this kind of rulemaking process, Your Honor, and I think your question suggests this, it flows directly from the power that is given to the Limited Gaming Commission to define terms that are included in the Constitution that are not otherwise defined. So in Article 18, Section 9, it is provided that the administration and regulation of this section shall be under an appointed Limited Gaming Control Commission. The rules and regulations shall include the necessary defining of terms that are not otherwise defined. So we have this broadly legislative kind of rulemaking process, which is unique to this commission, in which they are empowered to define constitutional language that is not otherwise defined. There has been some effort by the appellants in this case to argue that that's limited to matters of strict licensing. But as this court examines the Tibolino case, Tibolino versus Paulino, again cited in all the principal briefs, it will note that the term payments to players, which is contained in the definition of the term adjusted gross proceeds, critical both in this litigation and in Paulino, contained the term adjusted gross proceeds. That term, payments to players, had been defined by the Gaming Commission, and it was in that context that the Supreme Court issued this very expansive, very broad opinion, which said it's the authority of the Gaming Commission to define this constitutional language, and so there's a kind of unique deference that's given to them to do that. All of which says that this is not the normal kind of judicial review process because of the deference given to the Commission. And in this particular instance, review by this court initially on the record is certainly adequate. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Let me address a few of the points that were brought up. Judge Roman, I think your concern about the failure of there being an order issued here is important. Had Blackhawk of Gilpin County sought review in the Court of Appeals in this context, after a rulemaking context, our claims would have been subject to dismissal by the Attorney General's office because the Court of Appeals jurisdiction does not attach until an order has issued. The term order is specifically defined in the Administrative Procedures Act 244102, subparagraph 10. The order means the whole or any part of a final disposition by any agency in any matter other than rulemaking. So how do we have notice that we're supposed to go to the Court of Appeals? 521 is in the licensing section. No order was issued. Gilpin County properly and timely filed an APA claim in the district court, and that's where rulemaking type challenges should be heard. Purcell is a quasi-judicial action. It wasn't rulemaking. Brown, while it mentioned rulemaking, it was really whether or not Russell Brown's property was within the defined boundaries of gaming. They had an evidentiary hearing. It was much more akin to a quasi-judicial proceeding where specific set precedent and law were applied to specific facts. Rusty Brown's property, is it within the gaming areas of Blackhawk? The Tibolino case, the Supreme Court case that Mr. Norton just mentioned, where was it filed? It was filed in Denver District Court. Denver District Court has an appropriate role for a review of Gaming Commission actions. Quasi-judicial, I believe, probably do need to go directly to the Court of Appeals, but not the action that was out here because there wasn't an order. Aside from the APA, City of Blackhawk may properly bring a declaratory relief action against the treasurer when it is alleged that he is violating the Constitution. There is no administrative agency action that was taken by the treasurer. We don't have any 30 or 45 day limit. He's not following his constitutional duties. He is following an administrative agency's recommendation or regulation that doesn't even have the constitutional authority to address the topic it addresses. We can bring that type of declaratory constitutional challenge at any time. There's no way that the state can go ahead and take unconstitutional conduct, go through an administrative agency process, and if no one challenges it within 30 or 45 days, it's forever off limits. That cannot be the law in this case. This case should be heard on the merits. It should be remanded back to district court because there are serious public monies being wrongfully distributed under the Constitution. And the merits need to be heard on this case.
So are you saying that your claims against the state treasurer should be segregated from the other claims against the other defendants and be looked at and treated differently?
Treated separately and certainly not swept under the rug as a, that should have been an APA type claim. The treasurer has no administrative agency action here. There's no time limit, there's no order issued. Anybody, any citizen of this state can challenge the treasurer's distribution of public monies under Rule 57, declaratory relief and injunctive relief. So aside from how you decide this under Section 521 or the APA for a lot of the claims against the Gaming Commission, if nothing else, the claims against the treasurer, Blackhawk's cross-claims against the treasurer for declaratory relief and injunctive relief should be heard on the merits. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. And I want to thank all counsel for your very helpful arguments this afternoon. This matter will stand submitted to the court, and an opinion will issue in due course. Thank you very much.